are back for another episode of the Hounsdown Center's podcast series, Off the Stage. I'm Maddie Miller, and I am our media specialist here at the Hounsdown Center. Today, I'm joined by two very special guests. One is my colleague, Kaylor Sweeney. Kaylor, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Maddie.
Kaylor, do you want to tell the audience what you do at the Hounsdown Center?
Yeah, and I can keep it brief so we can get to Polly. So I'm the Common Ground Initiative Program Manager at the Hounsdown Center, and I head all of our public programming related to the Common Ground Initiative.
I love it, and he does great work at that. And our very special guest today is Dr. Polly Diven, Director of Grand Valley State University's International Relations Program. Dr. Diven, thank you for making the trip here today.
You're very welcome. Wasn't that far away, but yeah.
Oh, I thought you were on the Allendale campus.
I am on the Allendale campus.
Oh, okay. So it's not too far.
I didn't come in from the Outer Banks.
I love it. Well, we are so excited to be having Dr. Diven on stage as part of our panel for an upcoming event that is titled Citizens of the World, Global Citizenship in U.S. Foreign Relations. And that event is on October 12th. And Dr. Diven will be joined on stage with three others, Dr. Christopher McKnight Nichols, Dr. Jeffrey Engel, and Dr. Emily Conroy Kretz. And it is going to be a great event. So is anybody particularly excited for something about the event?
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in here. I think I'm excited to see this all come together, having seen it through from the beginning. And I'm eager to bring the citizenship component into it. And I think it's very philosophical, this idea of, you know, we're a shared humanity and we should operate with that in mind. But I'd like to see how we could actually achieve that in real policy decision making.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in the fact that I'm the only political scientist on the panel. And the other three are historians. Uh-huh. And I'm kind of wondering what that means and how intimidated I should be. But also hoping to bring sort of current examples and current events into the mix.
Yeah, I love it. Well, it is certainly going to be a great event, so we are excited for that. Okay, so we are going to jump in with how we start all of our podcasts, which is the famous BOQ, which Dr. Diven, you have sitting in front of you. If you, for those listening, these are just questions that were submitted during on social media, and Dr. Diven is going to pull out two, read them to us, and then you can answer.
The question is, if you could deliver one message to your younger self, what would you say?
Ooh.
I would say two things. One thing, I know it's only one message, but one thing I would say is worry less.
Yeah.
Things will be okay. I think I was fairly stressed out at certain points in my life when I didn't think I could manage. Some of that's more on the home front than in my professional life. But I would also say, don't waste time. So things that you really want to get done, just get to them. Don't procrastinate. Start to really move ahead, because a lot of the things that have been important to me have been things that I got to and I'm really glad I got done. And some of the things that I wasted time on or continue to waste time on, I think, I'm always trying to keep those things in perspective.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. Let's do one more BOQ.
Okay, here we go. I hope it's something not so
philosophical,
amorphous.
We'll
when you were a kid, what did you do? What did you want to be when you grew up?
Ooh, this
okay,
is a good
so that's
one.
A very good question for me, because I grew up in a family that had sort of a more working class orientation than I have today. My father had a feed, seed, and fertilizer store that he managed, and my mom was a nurse. And I grew up thinking in some of those terms. I helped work with my father at the store, taking inventory, waiting on customers, and things like that. But one of the things I really wanted to do when I was younger is I wanted to sell shoes. I enjoyed going to visit the shoe salesman. He was a very charismatic shoe salesman in our local store named Jimmy.
That's awesome.
And I loved the idea of selling shoes. That, however, ended pretty early. That was kind of an early ambition of mine. Then later in high school, I started thinking more about my desire to travel and my desire to, you know, get involved in more scholarly pursuits, education, learning. And at that time, I started to think about being an attorney. I think that's what occurs to a lot of high school students before they move off of that, which I did. But that, I think, was something I was, when I got a little older, I was thinking about maybe law.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'm interested. Do you still have an interest in shoes? Are you still?
No, not at all. I really don't like shoes, so to be honest, because like I find them very uncomfortable. I mostly just wear gym shoes or very comfortable shoes. That's something, and I don't have a very large collection or anything like that. No, nothing.
Hey, that's okay. So you probably wouldn't have worked out maybe then. This career was better for you.
No. I think it was more sort of the charisma of the guy than the actual thing he was selling.
Yeah, I love it. Well, that question actually leads fantastically into the first question that I had prepared for you, which was just something kind of I like to always start off the stage with, which is just tell us a little bit about where you grew up. What were you interested in high school? And then how did that transition into going into college and degrees and kind of the beginning of your career?
So I grew up in upstate New York. As I said, you know, with great parents who were actually very, very, very hardworking. My parents, by the way, are still alive at 91 and 93. Wow. They're very vigorous.
That's amazing.
Sound mind and body. And I had three siblings. I was the youngest. I spent a lot of time outdoors playing. You know, we didn't have cable TV. We certainly didn't have anything very electronic going on. So I had a very sort of ordinary, I would say, childhood. Where did you want me to go from there?
Yeah, just kind of talk about kind of what you were talking about earlier, how you wanted to maybe be an attorney. That was kind of like your first career path, and then how did that kind of change maybe?
Yeah, so in high school I knew I didn't want to do math and science, but I wasn't sure about the rest of it. I actually went to college thinking either government or psychology or English. I went to a liberal arts college, Hamilton College, in upstate New York, and I knew that I wanted to be broadly educated. They sent us a reading list the summer before my freshman year, and I read everything on it. I mean, I was really hungry to learn in a way. Yeah. I think I went to a particularly unchallenging high school, and so I was just really ready to get to college and get going. So I loved that. In college, I really fell into the government major because I wanted to spend a semester in Washington, D.C., which I did. They had a semester in D.C. program. And so then by the time I had done that, that seemed like the easiest way to finish a major. I also went to a college that, even to this day, Hamilton College doesn't have any general education. And you're sort of talked to about fulfilling different areas, but no one ever required me to take anything I didn't want to take, which was fantastic for me because I was a good student anyway. I really wanted to learn a lot anyway. And then in my junior year, after spending a semester in D.C., I spent a whole year overseas in Denmark, which was a last-minute decision. I didn't know much about Denmark. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just knew that some of my best friends weren't coming to college, going back to college, and so I might as well do that. And I had a really wonderful experience there, and that's where I became interested in political matters. It was a very political time. Ronald Reagan had just been elected president. He was inaugurated in 1980. That's when I left. Denmark had gone the other way. They're much more sort of into their social progressivism, so I saw a huge contrast there. I lived with a fantastic family that was pretty political. And then also I just realized, you know, I was about to graduate from college, and I knew so little about the world that it really bothered me. I'd mostly taken a lot of American politics courses, and it made me really want to know more.
That's awesome. I love how college experiences allow us to, like, really find what we're passionate about. That's awesome. Have you ever seen your family that you stayed with in Denmark since you did that time? That's awesome. Whoa. You've kept up with them?
I keep up with one of them. Three of them have passed away, but my Danish sister, so to speak, she and I are in touch a lot. I visited her a couple years ago, and I'll see her again next year.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome. I love to hear that. So this is a good question for me to ask, because I would say that I'm a common person. So can you tell me, as a common person, what exactly about foreign policy and international relations, like, interests you? Like, what is the draw there?
I guess I can't imagine not being interested. It's always hard for me. But to me, there's such an enormous world out there. There's so much going on, and I want to be able to understand it. I want to know more about how people behave, how organizations behave. I'm really fascinated by interactions among economic groups, between military groups, diplomatic groups. I just feel like, I don't know, I still am like that student who just got into college who just needs to know as much as she can about everything. And that's a very broad area, so there's a lot to learn. And I actually am not a typical academic in the sense that I've kind of honed in on one area my whole life. I've really been very, maybe too likely to flit from topic to topic, but that has also allowed me to travel to different parts of the world and to get to know lots of different groups of people. So my passion is really about the intersection of domestic and foreign policy, what it is about American politics that creates our foreign policy. But you can study that in lots of different contexts, right? So you can go, I've taught overseas in lots of different countries and studied overseas in lots of different places as a way to learn more about that.
That's awesome. I actually, one of my questions on here was, I was reading your bio page on Green Valley website, and I saw that...
probably way out of date.
It said, no, that's okay. It said on there that you've actually received like 4 different grants for international travel and what I'm guessing is like research. Mm-hmm. So do you have any highlights from those trips that you'd like to share?
There's so many. I mean, I've just had amazing experiences. I've traveled, I've probably taught overseas in about 10 or 15 different countries now, and they've all been really different. And I've met students. I mean, it's the students, right? And the professors overseas that become close colleagues, but also teach you so much about how people think differently about the world. So this past May, for example, in May of 2023, I spent the entire month as a Fulbright teaching specialist in Taiwan at Donghai University. And you know, I didn't know that much about Taiwan going into the experience, but it was a phenomenal experience. I think, like, the learning curve was really steep for me because I didn't know much, and I still don't know much in a sense. I don't speak Chinese. I haven't studied Chinese history and politics, but I learned quite a bit, and I was able to really share sort of what we have in common with people, but also note that we have some pretty big gaps. I also love to do something that I think is the most important thing that I actually do traveling overseas, and that is help people understand more of sort of what's going on in the United States. Mm. I feel like overseas a lot of people assume that foreign policy is based in, you know, what the president wanted, or it's very political, and I like to be able to teach them more about some of the political culture, the institutions. You know, they just don't see that American foreign policy derives from a whole set of constitutional foundations, historical behaviors, you know, lobby groups, parties, you know, they don't know the complexity of it. And I think it helps them understand more why the United States makes foreign policy as we do if they can understand the broader context of that. So one thing has been a great privilege for me to do is to teach U.S. foreign policy overseas and help people understand more like where it comes from. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Dr. Denver, is there a major like misunderstanding or something that you'll, I mean, you spoke about the assumption that like maybe the president acts unilaterally. Is there something like very, that you see like across cultures or in your experiences where it's like something you need to address right away when you start the class to help
them
understand?
That's a great question.
Well, I mean, obviously the unilateralism of the president is one thing that they have to, you know, quickly come away from, but I also think many students overseas don't understand the importance of single member districts and the fact that, you know, members of the House of Representatives are beholden to, or they're, you know, they have this set number of constituents and how much that will make their life determined one way or another, how much they are single-minded seekers of re-election, to quote Mayhew, you know, how much they really need to be elected and how important domestic politics are for them. Another thing I think that many, that I really need to impress upon people is that Americans aren't knowledgeable about the rest of the world and don't have the kind of information. I mean, typically students overseas know much more about us than we know about them, right? And so they don't it helps them to understand that my students have a whole different understanding and oftentimes a lack of understanding of their region. So we're not doing something to them. We just don't, most of my students don't really have a clue about, you know, what underpins conflict in Southeast Asia or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and that when you guys were kind of talking about that, it made me think of my friend went to visit one of her friends in Spain, and she said every time she met somebody and they knew that she was from America, the first question they would ask is like, "What do you think of Trump?" Like right. That was like always like the first question. So that's just one thing I was kind of thinking of. Like, it is kind of interesting to think about like how people view America that don't live in America, because I can't imagine. So
yeah.
Interesting. So you said earlier that you made a comment that said, like, it's all about the students, right? And I can definitely see that just from, like, your bio. Having worked at Grand Valley for many years, I think it's really cool to just think about all the students you've invested in. So I would love to just first ask kind of about Grand Valley, Grand Rapids specifically. Like, what is your favorite part about working for the Grand Valley community, and what has kept you here for all these years?
I think one of the things I love about working at Grand Valley is that it is a teaching-focused place, that I am primarily a teacher. I mean, I've always been involved in active research, but that it is a teaching-focused place where I do get to know my students. I don't think I would have had a successful career if I had been in a large university where the motivations weren't toward getting to know students and working directly with students. So the student orientation is very important to me. And I also think that Grand Valley over the years has been a tremendous place for me to work in terms of allowing me flexibility to pursue my own interests in research. I have never had big challenges in terms of getting funding to go to conferences and to present my research. I feel as if they've been very supportive of what I consider to be the most important parts of my job. Even though there is some frustration in the fact that not all of our students are necessarily fascinated by politics or knowledgeable about politics, I also do like the idea that I work with, students who are not extremely well-off economically or extremely privileged. I like the idea that I can be really having an impact and meeting with kind of real people. Even though my own education was at a school that really was for privileged people, and I benefited from that, as a teacher, it feels good to work with people who don't have that background.
That's awesome to hear. My next kind of follow-up question was just going to be like, do you have like a student highlight story that comes to your mind when you think of just like an interaction or an experience that you had with a specific student?
I've had so many great interactions with students. I can't tell you how many I've had. I mean, just, you know, many, many, many. So I take a group of students to Washington, D.C. every other summer, and there I meet with former students, and there's just so many really cool students. But I will tell you, a couple of my former students actually have been on the Board of Trustees at Grand Valley. I'm very close with one of them who just stepped off the board, Megan Saul. Her name is Radecki now.
Our director.
Your director.
Yes.
So I know her really well. I also have had students who do such amazing things. But just yesterday I received an email from a student that made my day. It's from a student who had done an internship with the Refugee Education Center in Kentwood and then went on to get a job with Samaritas, a refugee assistance agency, and she's working doing really great things in Grand Rapids with refugees. And she thanked me for, you know, she said very kind words about me as a professor and as a sponsor. I am also running the International Relations Internship Program, and I had helped her get that position. So that was really heartwarming to hear that she's doing well.
That's awesome to hear. I didn't even know that our own director, Megan Radecki, or Megan Saul.
Major.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Was.
Well, that's cool. Well, we have definitely loved having Megan as our director, so it's been awesome. So to wrap up, this is the last question that I always leave. I always ask this as the last question, just because I have learned a lot from the people who have been on this podcast. And just whenever people who are very accomplished in their career or have had a lot of cool things, I always love to hear their answer to this. So I always ask people, what advice would you have for somebody wanting to go into your field? So such as international relations, foreign policy, being a professor, any of that, what advice would you give them?
I guess there's so much I could say here, but I think the most important thing might be have that hunger and interest. Just really keep reading and listening and working. I feel as if there's so many opportunities in this field that are, you know, either in government or in the private sector, in nonprofits. There's loads and loads of people who are looking to hire people in that field, but they always say the same thing. They want someone who has some passion, who has a genuine interest, who really loves to learn. And I think those are the most important things, just following your passion. Working hard, not wasting time. You know, I really feel as if that is super important. Another thing I guess I would give the advice is learn how to write and learn how to speak in public. Those are two things I really focus on in my classes, and I feel as if many students, you know, think they could sit in the back of the classroom and be very shy and quiet and then still go out in a career, but I want to help them understand that, you know, what you're partly doing here is learning how to make presentations and to speak in front of a group. In my foreign policy classes, we always do a series of what we call pro-cons or debates, because I really need people to understand that that's a big part of becoming successful. And obviously also writing. You know, no one gets through my classes without a lot of tortuous writing, because I think it's just so important for people. So I guess those would be the things I would focus in on.
Yeah, that idea of being able to communicate what your thoughts in your head are, I think I definitely underestimated that in my college time. But through writing papers, and I haven't had many public speaking opportunities. Honestly, I feel like this podcast is really...
That's going to say, you're sort of doing it now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I've learned a lot of skills, because, you know, you can think things, really good thoughts in your head, but sometimes it's hard to communicate those on paper or in front of a crowd. So that's definitely important. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Devin, for being on our podcast. And we are so excited for the event on October 12th.
Great. I'm excited, too.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course. For those of you who are listening, if you would like to register for the event or learn more information about it, this link will be in the description below, but it is gvsu.edu/hc/global citizenship. And I've also included a link to our full event page below, so you can check out all of that there. Thank you for listening to another episode of Off the Stage.
Thank you for listening to Off the Stage Podcast, a series produced by the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University. The Hauenstein Center, inspired by Ralph Hauenstein's life of leadership and service, is dedicated to raising a community of ethical, effective leaders for the 21st century. For more information on our center, our Cook Leadership Academy, or our Common Ground Initiative, visit our website at www.gvsu.edu/hc. To keep up with our current events and reoccurring initiatives, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, all of which can be found linked below. If you liked this episode, consider giving us a review or rating so we can be found by other podcast listeners. Again, thanks for listening to Off the Stage Podcast.